Hello, 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 everyone. Welcome back to the show. My name is Dan Hafner. If you are joining for the very first time, welcome to the show. If you're a return listener, thank you for coming back. Really appreciate all of that. So before I introduce my next guest, I'm very excited to share this conversation with him. We're going to dive down the SaaS conversation, this rabbit hole, but we're also doing it from a very overarching view. The man I'm going to be talking to and introducing you to in a second, he has over 40 years of experience in this, which is longer than I myself have been alive. So there is quite a bit of wisdom that I'm bringing you guys with this. So I'll get to that in a second. So stick around if you're in the SaaS game, if you're thinking about getting in the SaaS game, you know, anything like that, this is going to be well worth a listen for you. But before I get into that, as always, please like, subscribe, share the show with anyone. We really appreciate any reviews, any shares. Whether you're on YouTube, Spotify, Facebook, wherever you listen to the show, really, really appreciate that. And thank you all for that as well. So without any further ado, I am going to introduce you all to my special guest here by the name of Steve Tafaro. He has over, like I said, over 40 years, I think maybe even 45 years of software experience, just big time in the SaaS game, has a new book coming out about this in the next couple of months. So Steve, welcome to the show, man. How are you doing?
I'm great, Dan. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Be so, on your show.
Yeah, it's an honor. It really is. So, I guess just give us a quick little blurb again, you know, more detail about who you are, what you do and what we're going to talk about today.
Well, I think my background is important because for your listeners, I started as a teacher and a football coach for 10 years, left teaching to go into business, and was very fortunate enough to be hired by IBM in the early 70s. And the training that I got from IBM was phenomenal. Had a good career at IBM, and then joined a software company that now in the mid 70s, a lot of people couldn't spell software, but we joined the software company, and it was founded by ex-IBM executives called Software Plus. I led the sales and marketing aspect of that company, and then became the head of retail industry marketing with Oracle, and then founded Tafaro & Associates in 1990. And for 20 years, I was hired by companies as an interim president executive responsible for driving growth and revenue acceleration for the specific company. And they range from the old Bell Atlantic, which is now Verizon, their software group. Many people and companies that made a Brillo, Purex, so both institutional products, software, a bunch of things. But it was all about how do you grow? How can we grow? How can we scale? And through those years, I developed a selling system called the Tafaro Growth Accelerator. It was developed, it was tested, it was refined, constantly refined. And now, since I'm, quote, semi-retired, I have become an author. And I'm trying to, you know, give back some of the things that I've learned through books. My first book, Winning at SaaS, will come out probably in April. And it's about sales. How do you scale a business that's different from a traditional software business? I can certainly get into that if you'd like, but that's where I am today in my career.
Very cool. Yeah. So you kind of answered one of the questions I was going to ask about, you know, your time back with IBM and all that stuff. So maybe we can come back to that, but that's a good one to move into is like, I've talked about it many, many times on the show. If you guys are, you know, repeat listeners, you kind of know all of this, but you know, so from someone who, and by the way, we were just on with our last episode, somebody with their brand new first podcast. This is Steve's first podcast, everyone. Yeah. So
go easy on me.
We're going to go easy on him. But yeah, welcome to the podcasting world. It's a great time. You're doing great so far. I'm excited to have you here. So what is like, why is like, what's the difference between, you know, what you just said, like selling with SaaS or having that kind of model versus something else? Like, I just kind of want to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, First, let's get up 1,000 feet and look at what SaaS is. In the old days, software was sold as a product. It was sold. It was capitalized over 5 years. Companies bought the software, put it on their computers, and ran the software. And so from the vendor standpoint, the relationship with the customer was somewhat casual. What they did is maintain the software. And companies had to go out and sell new accounts month after month. Today, cloud-based SaaS companies deliver their solutions in the form of renewable annual subscriptions, right? So so regardless of the total contract value of a license agreement, revenues are recognized month to month. So let's assume that I sell something to you for over a 3-year license for $72,000. Revenues are $2,000 a month. So I have a bookings number. I can book 72,000, but I can only recognize revenue at $2,000 a month. So bookings really are a forward-looking metric that people can see. But since revenue is recognized month to month, the companies, SaaS companies, require a lot more support on the early stages to essentially underwrite their business and form the network to deliver their products. On the positive side, though, because revenues are contracted over time, bookings, it becomes a very good view for investors to evaluate a SaaS business. Revenue is predictable. The bookings number increase as the booking number increases. Growth is organic, and a lot of the growth comes from existing customers. And they are inherently scalable. So what do you do in a SaaS business given that model? You have to look at the customer as being a perpetual customer. Customer for life. And what happens is that as you do business with a customer, your gross margins increase tremendously. So if you sign a 3-year deal, gross margins in year one might be 50, 60%. In year two, they're in the 80s. Year three, they're in the 80s. If you renew them and continue that process, you have a very scalable business, much like a flywheel. It just continues to churn. And what you have to do, though, are three critical things. And this is where a lot of companies falter, in a sense. You have to do three things. You have to first sell new accounts. You got to continue that process. So you have to have a new account sales organization. But you also have to grow existing accounts. And I think those two skills are different. So you need a very good account management function. Account managers are different than new account salespeople. They're both strategic and tactical. They're relationship oriented. They have to know the product and the service very well, build relationships in existing accounts and grow those relationships. Different techniques, different skills. And you have to be totally integrated with marketing. Because if you're a SaaS customer, you have to view, they have to view you as somebody that is competitive and a leader in the market. And so your marketing has to, through content and so forth, has to assure customers that you're worth, you know, staying with. So those three operations have to be totally integrated. And the skills required in each one are different. And so that's the key thing in a SaaS business, what most people have to do. How you do that, and the playbook for doing that is what will be my book, Winning at SaaS. And there's a different playbook for account management, different playbook for sales and marketing.
Yeah. So that's good segue into the book. I like it. You said, yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. I heard a stat one time, and maybe you can confirm this or maybe give us additional insights into it, but there was something I read it or it was in I cannot remember the source, but there was something around the average churn rate, you know. So for churn, it's how many new subscribers you get versus how many are, you know, canceling, right, or going out the door. And with software as a service, it's very, very low. It tends to be very sticky, right? By sticky, it means, you know, if you end up buying a software product and you put some, you know, some kind of system in there that runs your business, or it's maybe accounting software, marketing software, or something like that, it's sticky, right? Because now you're reliant on that. What are you going to do? Not pay for it and cancel it? Like,
right.
The cost of that, of doing that, then outweighs like the lost opportunity of cost of like, well, everything's going to break and we're not going to make any money. Right. So it becomes a very sticky way of, once you get a customer signing up, okay, now you have more bookings on, you know, like you said, in the future. It makes it very, very reliable to grow. And I remember one of my old mentors was talking about, like, you know, profit margins. You know, you think about a restaurant profit margin versus, you know, normal business profit margins. Right. And when you talk about, in the world of business, an 80% profit margin is like stupidly like it's just, it's amazing. Right. So I don't think people, like you said, they don't really appreciate that very often until you really get into this game. Do you see that very often of like founders, do they really appreciate how this flywheel works, or do they have to be into it first and kind of see happening?
You know, it's been around a lot now, so I think they can read about it and so forth, but they have to have a very good CTO that can explain it and run it. For example, you do a first year out, you sell $1 million of SaaS business over time, and you pay your sales force $1.2 million. And to do that, and you have another couple $100,000 in operational expenses. So you think on the surface, well, gee, that's not very good. I mean, I can only book, you know, monthly revenue and so forth. But year two, you sell another $1 million. You don't have that $1 million of sales cost anymore. They're on to something else. And now you have the operational expense, which is fairly low. So you can see how the business changes. Year three, there is no sales cost, right? And there's a cost for account management. So the more you do that, and the more you can cross-sell and upsell within an account, think about that, you know, you have a customer for life. But the organization, the culture of the organization, has got to view the customer as perpetual.
Yeah.
And it's a cultural issue. You have to constantly add value. And where it gets tough, initially, you install the application, right? The customer signs up, now they're running it, and they have problems. You know, it's not what they expected, or they have configuration issues and so forth. That's when you're tested. And if an account manager can go in and solve those problems and deal with the client and facilitate the fixes that are necessary to get that client up and running, they have tremendous, they're viewed by the client as being extremely valuable, and relationships just continue to develop. So that's why you need the account management is a critical function in a SaaS business.
Yeah. Okay, so you mentioned this a couple of times, so I want to get into it. And I know this is very broad and overarching because every business is different. Every SaaS right. product is different. But when you talk about upsells, cross-sells, you know, increasing right. that lifetime value of a customer, you know, what are some of the most effective things that you've seen? And again, this is probably hard to, maybe you can give specific examples of specific, you know, businesses or something. Okay. Is there account management that you can upsell? Is there VIP services or community or different things that you could then upsell on top of that to increase the lifetime value of a customer?
Yeah, I think that you either are selling, and I'm going to be generalized here, a software that's vertical. You know, geared to a specific market or customer type, financial services is an example, or you're selling a horizontal system like compensation, which can be, you know, and so you have from a vertical view, you're dealing with various application areas, okay? And from a horizontal view, you're dealing with business functions. So each area has people associated with that area, and interests can come from many levels of a company. And many times they're passed down from executives to managers. So initially what happens is that the new account salesperson through marketing, and again, another statistic is that I'll say close to 60% of customers don't interact with a salesperson until they're in a decision mode. Marketing is such today that they can get the information, do an evaluation without the need of a person. Good news is that they often need somebody to close the deal. And so when that person comes in, whether it's an account manager or salesperson, the client does not want to hear, or the prospect does not want to hear, oh, this is my product, the typical sales pitch. What they want to hear is, how can you add value to my company? That's what they want to hear. You should know my company. You should know my business. How do you add value? So think of that. I mean, that is huge. So when you think of that, interest can come from different levels, and prospects usually say, well, we know what we need. But they can't always see the periphery of what they can have. Okay. And so what I've come up with a while back is something called, and I'll get to your question about the power index. The power index is a system. Now, if you're selling to a vertical company, the power index is based on application, a financial. It could be investor relations, deal origination, sourcing, fundraising, whatever you're running. But in each one of those categories is a list of everything that this system will deliver to you. So I can say, Dan, you're head of investor relations or deal origination. We're going to do all these things. If you take our system, you can get all these capabilities. Where are you underpowered? What do you have today? And where are you? What don't you have? Now you can see that for your area, okay? Manage the firm pipeline, track senior professional sourcing, whatever. And now what's happening is selling, you're not selling anymore, you're helping somebody buy. So they look at that and they say, well, gee, we're underpowered in these areas. And then the question is, if I can show you how our software we'll address those areas, I'm going to ask you two questions. Did we address your concern? And if you had the system, what would that mean? And at that point, you take notes. And then you begin to ask questions like, if I can show you value, we'll say, what does that mean? And you and I will put a number on it. So we have a two-step selling process. First step is, we try to understand where you're coming from. We show you a little bit of our software just to get the feel of it. But then we have this power index where I will drill down and working with you, identify all the areas that we can help you. Because what we want to do is add value. Once we identify those areas, we'll show you how we do that. You and I will discuss the value to the organization. And if it's significant, I'd like a couple of things from you. I'd like you to introduce me to other members of your company that are also have to sign off. Besides yourself, who else needs it? That's how you get into it. Now, so whether I'm selling something new to my first, person in that account, or I'm in the account and I'm moving from, investor relations to the person who runs deal origination, where I can sell another 20 or 30 seats, or somebody who's in charge of fundraising or sourcing, where I can sell another 20 or 30 seats, I need to do that same thing. I need to get value, be perceived as giving value. I need to be introduced to those folks, and I need to show them the same thing. And that kind of concept and that approach is one that is current because people want value. Does that make sense?
No, that was beautiful. I love the simplicity that you just said, that power index right there. Where am I underpowered? That's such a good term. I've never heard that term. Yeah, I love that term.
I think I'll give myself credit as being the first one that is. I've not seen this before, and we developed it maybe in 2016 with a company called Deal Cloud. And Deal Cloud went from four people to, they're hundreds now, and they're 200 million. They get over 2,000 clients. So, I mean, and we just simplify. You got to simplify the process. You have to get the user to buy. They have to feel, okay?
Yeah. And, well, go ahead.
No, I mean, there's principle, you know, a sale can only occur if somebody can articulate the fact that they have an issue and that where there's discrepancy between what they really need and where they are. If they're willing to explain that and voice that, and you can look at that discrepancy and show somebody how you can close that gap, a sale can occur.
That makes a lot of sense, because I mean, I was amazed at the number you said of 60% of people that will actually get to a point. I think if I'm framing it incorrectly, excuse me, but it was 60% of people kind of know or not whether they're going to do it but they need to actually speak to a person. Was that what that was?
Well, what's happening with the internet today is filled with information. You know, people think the internet is a selling medium. I think it's a buying medium, to be honest with you. And when you look at the internet, yeah, I can look at companies and see what they're doing, what their software. There's a lot of information out there. So I don't need to talk to a salesperson. I'm going to talk to other people like me. What are you using? I'm going to go on the internet and maybe select three or four companies that I want to talk to. Now, at that point in time, when I'm ready to bring these folks in, I'm going to do that. Now, that's 57, 60% of the cycle is done before you even come in, before a salesperson comes in. So that's why that's the power of marketing. That's why this whole thing has to be integrated. Marketing has to create that demand. They have to be perceived as selling, solutions that you need. For your organization and so forth. And it's that, and you got to have all three integrated.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. So I work with a lot of people who are kind of in the beginning stages, right? So from that perspective, would you say that, because I mean, I've bought a lot of software in my life. I've sold a lot of software in my life. So there's always, I feel like, this difference in different ways that you sign up for things, where there is a completely automated sales process of, hey, here's our thing. Maybe there's a webinar or a video or a sales thing. And then they can literally go to the pricing page, click the plan that they want, purchase, input the card. Everything's automated. They don't even need to talk to anyone or anything like that. Then there's also, like you said, the part where, hey, book a demo with us or book a call with us, and everything funnels down into schedule or things like that. Is there certain industries that one would work better over the other? Do you always advocate that a SaaS should do demos instead of doing automated sales? Or is there a certain price level where you should book a demo? Like, do you have any insight?
Yeah, no, on that? I think that that's a good, very good question. I think both are doable. I think I look at something called the complex sale. And the complex, if you're selling something where multiple people have to agree that this is the solution they want, and it is fairly significant in commitment and price, then I think you can't do the first, I click up a couple of boxes and order it. I think you have to have the relationship with the client. So what my experience is oriented to is complex sales versus more tangible things that, everybody knows what they need. It's, an example would be, I guess, a email system, that I know what I need. I can quickly pick one. What's the price? I can go that way. But when you're selling complex solutions and there is a buying team involved, four or five people, they have to look at it technically. They have to look at it from a user standpoint. Finance has to get involved. Many times you have, you have to really understand what the executive is trying to do strategically. That requires a lot of interaction, and it could be that I'll talk about something else in a minute. But a typical complex sale, one that is where the prospect is in a buying mode, could take 4 to 6 months to close. So during that time, you have to have a plan. You have to have a system that takes those buyers through the logical path of decision making. And that's another thing that's different. That process is different for account managers than new account selling people and so forth. And that's something that we stress quite a bit. I can talk about that if you'd like.
No, that's yeah, that'd be interesting. Because it's a whole different ballgame than just, you know, downloading an app and buying the $5 a month thing. You know, it's a very, very completely different process.
Relationship self, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you're doing great so far on your first podcast. You're knocking it out of the park. So I did want to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about this because it's very interesting. I've seen a couple of these different products and services out there. So when I see something that's called the Tafaro Growth Accelerator, and you mentioned it earlier, something like that has such a sexy sound. It's just like, oh man, like the Growth Accelerator, like that's cool. What is the Tafaro Growth Accelerator? Like what, if I were to join that, say, you know, if I join that for something, like what would I expect? What would that do for me?
It's a system that it's a selling system that has been tested and refined over the years that has five steps to it. And each step it starts with qualification and goes to verification, positioning, solving, and confirming. And each step, each phase has a series of steps that a salesperson should go through to, in essence, grow the business. Now, what we do is you can use the Growth Accelerator for new account selling. There's certain foundations and principles which are inherent in Growth Accelerator, but it is also configured to the needs of the company involved and the way their clients buy. So, for example, if I'm selling you and we're in a verification state, means that the verification means I got to eliminate no decision. So what I want to do is I want to increase my chances of winning. I want to compress the sales cycle, right? And so what I'm going to do at that stage is make sure that I'm going to verify the fact that you're an active, engaged potential buyer. Okay, that's my role in that particular stage. So in order to do that, I'm going to say to you, Dan, tell me about your interest in our solution. Where are you? Are you guys actively looking? I'm going to ask you those questions. And then I'm going to talk about my selling process like we did before. I'm going to show you where we have that we can add value. And I'm going to ask you this, Dan, if I can show you that we can add value to your operation, would you be willing to introduce me to other people in your part of the buying team? By the way, besides yourself, who are they? Now, you're going to tell me that or not. And if you don't, and I may say, well, you know, Dan, you know, if multiple people are involved, I can't move forward unless I know that. So this is a win-win. I'm going to work with you to show you how we can satisfy you, but you need to work with me too. And so you get, and then you do that. And while you're doing it, you're asking questions. Who's the sponsoring executive? Who's the one that's driving this thing? And there's a series of questions that you ask through that process to be verified. Now, what happens is that when you have a sales team, and by the way, for account management, verification means something else, but there's another series of questions. Yeah. But when you think about having 20 or 30 salespeople, each one of them, you want to get each one of them to move through the process the same way. And you're really changing behavior here. So I want to know that in Verify, I've got a 30% chance. If we complete Verify, I got a 30% chance of winning. Verification should take 30 days. Then we go to position. Position is another phase. That's 45 days, but we're going to have a 50% winning chance of winning if we do that right. And it goes through the whole process, right? So that you might have a 4 months or 5 months sales cycle. But I can tell you through something that we call the productivity index, based on your quota, what your remaining sales obligation, the average amount of the sale, and the win rates associated with each phase, and the time, the closure associated with each phase, I can tell you at any time the amount of accounts you need in your pipeline to make your number. I can do that because I have a system. And if we're using the system and I know what the win rates are and so forth, I can do that. And so the question then becomes, how do I train people to use the system? How do you change behavior? It's really it. And you just can't show somebody it and explain it. You got to involve them. They have to be part. They have to have equity in this process as you develop it, as you configure it. And then you have to measure it. And you have to have your management measure this over time. It takes about 6 sessions with a good manager to get somebody to actually begin using the system the right way and know that they can't get away with it unless they don't. Now, you know, everybody's personality is different. Their approach is different. Their relationships are different. But these questions need to be asked. Information needs to be gathered. And we got to do that quickly. So that's a process. It's applied to account management. It's applied. Part of that process is the Power Index is an inherent part of that process. It's a tool that we have to use. It becomes a tool that is very powerful, especially in a vertical market. We could say that based on 500 clients that we have in the Power Index, 90% of them were underpowered in this area. Is that you? You know, that kind of thing. So you just build on it. You know, it's that kind of. Okay. Did I answer your question?
No, that does. That's very interesting. I was kind of wondering. I like that name. So it's just very, very cool. So
the growth accelerator are the principles and foundations required. It's a process based on the fundamental principles and foundations of selling, applied to an organization and taught in a way that is gets people to have equity in that process.
Yeah, makes sense.
And it's been implemented in hundreds of companies, and I've worked. You know, it's what we did over time.
Yeah. All right. Very cool. So looking forward into, you know, the near future, things you see going on right now, what are you seeing in going on in the world of SaaS now that either has your attention or is causing you concern, or maybe potential things for us to look out for? I know, again, very, very broad question, but, you know, what, based on your, you know, experience, like what's going on, what's going through your mind? Are there things you're worried about, things you're seeing?
Artificial intelligence and how to implement it in a SaaS environment. Mm. And so I facilitate an executive board of the leading investment banking companies and private capital marketing companies for a company called DealCloud, which is owned by a public company called Intapp. These are, the leaders of, 12 investment banks and 12 private capital companies, their largest clients. And we meet with them, at least twice a year. And I listen to what they're talking about. And the one thing, and again, the product, the company that I represent sells a SaaS solution. What they're talking about is artificial intelligence. How do you build that into the system? And it's interesting because you can look at artificial intelligence many ways. It can become very scary, but you know what these people say initially? What we want to do year one is we want to take the low cost work away from the high cost people. If I can use artificial intelligence to do that, then we've just increased our productivity. So then I'll say, well, what does that mean? You know, low cost, what is the low cost work? And I'm some of the people that you have in your organization, and you identify that. So, and then you say, you know, well, that's great. Then what you want artificial intelligence to do, you it's going to gather information to do that work. What do you need? And the area is adoption. It's great for SaaS companies because for artificial intelligence to really work, a SaaS or a company who's using a SaaS system has to have it implemented throughout the business in every area of operation, or else I don't have the data available to turn on an AI application to make my business better. So we convert that my clients to, you know, to like the internet. I remember when the internet happened. You were born in 1990. That's when I started to Firm Associates. Did we have the internet there? No, I don't remember. But this is revolutionary. So what do you need? How are you going to use artificial intelligence? What do you need from us to use it effectively? We have artificial intelligence tools in the software. In order to use them, you need to be compliant in all areas. You need to have adoption. So that's what I see. And I think that if you believe that and the leading people in these organizations do, I think it speaks very strongly for SaaS, but you have to build AI capabilities within the application.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's key.
Okay. Very cool. One more question I want to ask you and then we can let you go, but I don't want to torture you too much with your first one here. So, this is probably going to be, if you need to take a second to think about this one, that's okay. But if you could give us, you know, one piece of advice, parting advice or wisdom, being in the SaaS game, being, you know, selling, whether it's, you know, the accelerator, like whatever the case might be, you know, any kind of most common roadblock that you see people run into, or something you could do over, you know, like what would you leave us with?
I think it's important that you have a culture, starts with culture, that's customer centric, and one that where the culture it believes in constantly adding value. I think you have to do that. So it's a culture. We have a customer for life, and we have to continue to add value to that client. Now, I think understanding that and believing that is key. Now, how you do that then becomes getting your folks involved. So if you have a vision, leadership obviously requires one thing, right? It's people, right? And so if you have a vision and you're leading people will follow you because not so much because of the vision. You then have to get them to believe in what you're doing. And in order to do that, you got to make them part of the process. So we have this new Tobarro Growth Accelerator. We're going to implement it, but here's phase one. This is what the outline says. Now, how do you feel about that? What do you want to do? That kind of thing. How do we add value constantly? And you work that way. It's total alignment. It's alignment. It's that whole culture of we're serving this client. We got to be good in marketing, selling, account management. You're going to be involved. And the other thing I would say is remember that you're changing behavior. People listen to things all the time and then they go back and they do what they always do. If you believe in it, you have to change behavior. And that's coaching. That's coaching. And it's really explaining why, working with somebody to make them better. And if you do those things, if you get the culture right, and you get the alignment and you have a system, whether it's the Growth Accelerator or some other system, realizing that in a SaaS environment, you need all three. You need marketing, new account selling, and account management. And you have that. And you have that approach, you'll be successful. I'm assuming you have a competitive software product. That's the assumption. But yeah, that's in a nutshell what you have to do. And you're dealing with investors that want it to happen right away. And that's the bookings number. The bookings number is that measurement to the investor that says, see, our forward view is positive. So that's why you have to do all three. And it's exciting. It's fun, but it really takes a demanding but nurturing management team.
I love what you just said about the behavior. That's such a key thing. That was really, really good. Thank you.
Welcome.
Very cool. All right. Well, I think that's going to be about a wrap. This was really, really awesome. I'm sure we could talk all day around these types of things. Didn't block off enough time for that. So no worries.
Thank you, Dan.
I'd love to have you back on at some point in the future. I would love to give everyone the link to purchase your book, but like you said, it's not coming out yet. So maybe we'll have to get some updated information from that with you.
The website will be up and running later this in the next 2 weeks. SteveTafaro.com, you'll get it. But no, I look forward to it, and we'll, you know, my goal is to do some speaking wherever I can, and so the book is a vehicle for that, and you can have certain. I'll give you a number of free copies to distribute, and we'll do that. But I it's a way for me to give back, and I hope everybody that is listening has gotten some value from today. And thank you, Dan, for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And good luck on the rest of the podcast tour. I know you're doing some of these to help promote the book and stuff. So yeah, would love to do that. And for those of you just listening, possibly, he said SteveTafaro.com. It's T as in Tom, AFARO is how you spell that.
It'll be another couple of weeks before you can get on, but it'll be there.
But that's the beauty of the podcast, man. It lives out there forever. So somebody might listen to this in 2 years and be like, wait, that's been like 2 years ago. So we can listen now. So we'll get that up. We'll get the link in there for you guys as well. Great. In the show notes. So
thank you.
All right, Steve. Yep. Thank you so much. Really appreciate you coming on. Looking forward to all this stuff and getting our hands on the book, man, for sure.
Thank you.
And well done. Well done on the first podcast. I'm glad we were able to, I hope this was a good experience for you. So
it was very positive. Thanks.
Awesome. Awesome, man. All right, guys. Well, that's all for this episode. Thank you very much for Steve for coming on. And again, if you haven't already, please like, follow, subscribe, wherever the heck you are. If you or someone you know might get value out of this, please share this episode with them and the show as well. So that's it. Appreciate all of you coming on. Talk to you guys next time.